Hello, and welcome to another trip to Poetry Planet. I'm your guide, Diane Severson. First, let me apologize up front if there's any background noise. It's been raining cats and dogs around here, and this is my last shot to record. The trucks and the cars in the background make so much noise when it rains. Not to mention that it's the daytime and I live in Paris. It's loud here. Anyway, I know, we've been here and in Contestville's sister city, Awardland, a lot lately. But I'm here to tell you that visiting these places, you get to hear some brand new poetry, vetted by the planet's most revered poets, in this case, Grandmaster Jane Yolen, and the citizens of Poetry Planet. Anyone's poetry can be nominated for the various awards, and anyone can enter the contest. You don't have to be a citizen. So, while I didn't serve on the committee of the 2013 poetry contest run by the SFPA, I was asked if I'd be willing to podcast the winning poems as part of the awards package, much like I did last year. It's much delayed, but here it is. There are 9 wonderful poems in long, short, and dwarf form that I'll be presenting to you today. The authors run the gamut. Some are well-known poets who have been around for many years. Others are up-and-coming yet familiar names. And a few are, at least to me, complete unknowns. In today's show, you'll hear, in order from third place to first, in the dwarf poem category of poems 10 lines or less, third place, A Butterfly in Costa Rica by Mary C. Rowan. In second place, The Spell No One Said at Her Birth by Jennifer Schomburg Kanke. And the winning poem, Dorothy's Poem by Lorraine Shine. In the short form category, we have, in third place, Wolf's 4 Questions by Megan Arkenberg. In second place, The Martian's Wife by Helen Patrice. And winning the category, We Pay Our Fare in Apples Here by Megan Arkenberg. And the long form poems are, in third place, The Dyson Tree's Promise by Bryant O'Hara. In second place, Hungry as Living Sorrow by Jenny Blackford. And the winning poem, The Girl Who Tipped Through Time by Robert Frazier. A Butterfly in Costa Rica by Mary C. Rowan. He is reading wing systems theory when a fly lands on the page. Paper turns to liquid, flows over his palms, and evaporates in the space above his knees. Mary Rowan's poems have been published in Verse Wisconsin, Stone Boat, Solitary Plover, and the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets Calendar and Muse Letter. Mary participated in the 2013 Winter Festival of Poets in Madison, Wisconsin, and distilled from nature poems celebrating artist Ellsworth Kelly. Her work will appear in the forthcoming Echolocations, Poets Map Madison, published by Cowfeather Press. Mary blogs at poeticpossibilities.wordpress.com. She says about the poem, "I wrote all the dwarf poems I submitted in one sitting. I read them at my monthly poetry group's critique, and someone asked, 'Where do these come from?' And all I could say was that sometimes I get in a zone. I do recall reading about wing systems theory and visualizing this guy reading when a fly landed on his book. I'm glad this one was selected because it was also my favorite."
The Spell No One Said at Her Birth. May that baby have steel in her veins, so she can walk by any X in the sand, knowing the bomb that's ticking ain't going to get her. Whatever shrapnel may come in the night, all her lights are off and her blinds are down. Just keep from her ears the insistent daily drippings of rain and leaky faucets. May they never find her cracks. May she never discover rust.
Jennifer Schomburg Kanke is a 4th-year doctoral candidate at Florida State University. Her work has appeared or is forthcoming in Pleiades, Prairie Schooner, Court Green, the Tampa Review, and the Laurel Review. She currently serves as the poetry editor for the Southeast Review. And about her poem, she says, I've been obsessed lately with writing poems about my paternal grandmother, who passed away about 5 years ago. She had a kind of stoical strength about her that was her greatest asset, but that also created a lack of nuance in her outlook on the world that I think was a detriment to her sometimes. I wanted a world where that was physically manifest, and where she could live and love that strength without paying the consequences. I wanted a world where I could protect her.
Dorothy's poem. The gray field of the rain had risen. She slept on the worn patchwork quilt of the sky. When she woke up, she dreamt that her house was flying, that a witch rode by, past the clouds, on a bicycle. Where was the air going? The wind poured out from her eyes.
Lorraine Shine is a New York poet and writer. Her work has appeared in Strange Horizons, New Letters, Hotel America, Witches and Pagans, and Enchanted Conversation, and in the anthologies The Moment of Change, Phantom Drift, and Alice Redux, a collection of stories about Alice in Wonderland. The Futurist's Mistress, her poetry book, is available from mayapplepress.com and online. She dabbles in paganism part-time and believes that fairy tales hold the key to understanding reality. Lorraine wrote to me, "For me, growing up as a baby boomer, the Wizard of Oz movie was an annual event, often shown at the holiday season. This poem came from my memory of the dreamlike scene when Dorothy is thrown onto her bed as the tornado intensifies outside. Of course, I like the book, too, which lacks the dual witch figure." Wolf's Four Questions by Megan Arkenberg. Perhaps he wasn't even chasing you. Perhaps he caught your scent in the moldering leaves, and the stink of soap, of lilac and clean wool turned his stomach. What then? Afterward, you wrap yourself in blankets or bath towels, and your hair on your shoulders is damp and cold and heavy as something dead. Every light in the house burns, the television sighs and whispers from the kitchen, and every shadow is something fluid and unfamiliar. Afterward, you wait. Why do you listen so intently for the catch on a lock that isn't there? The running is the best part. Everyone agrees. The running is magical. Branches snap and scrape, break and draw blood. Your feet slide. You catch your weight on raw palms and fingernails caked with dirt. Air burns your mouth. Your vision dances black. And still you are running. How did you get so far without once looking over your shoulder? It was never just a walk in the woods. You were searching for something, looking for beauty sharp enough to pierce your loneliness like moonlight falling through branches. What was it you expected to find? Megan Arkenberg lives and writes in California. Her work has recently appeared in Asimov's Lightspeed, Strange Horizons, and The Best Horror of the Year, Volume 5. And has tried for Best Short Story of 2012 in the Asimov's Readers Award. Her poem, The Curator Speaks in the Department of Dead Languages, won the Reisling Award for Best Long Poem of 2012. Megan procrastinates by editing the fantasy e-zine Mirror Dance. Megan also submitted another poem which won the category. More about both poems after the one that won. The Martian's Wife by Helen Patrice, after reading H.G. Wells. I loved him most when he climbed down from the tripod machine, his skin glistening like wet leather, smelling of human blood. I'd go to where he squatted in the corner, his eyes lidless and staring, his body heaving in gravity, and touch the writhing skin of his back as he trembled in the air that ate at him. He tasted of red weed and old sand. I'd ease him back to the floor, but he could not mate me. He'd seen too much of war, of my weakened world. Even as he suckled at my wrist, he died. And I lived to take into myself all the microbes of his desolate home. Helen Patrice is a writer and poet living in Melbourne, Australia. Her work has appeared in literary magazines such as Mean Gin, Southerly, Westerly, LINQ, and newspapers such as The New Age and The Australian. Genre magazines such as Starlog, Pandora, Aurealis, Interzone, and ASIM have published her poetry and fiction. Helen lives with her husband, son, three cats, and one brainless pup. In her spare time, Helen reads tarot, casts spells, dances under the Australian moon, and watches geeky and nerdy science documentaries with her husband. She says, "My poem came from my fascination with Mars and with The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. I simply can't leave the book, CD, or movies alone. I come back to them over and over, thinking about Mars, Martians, war machines, and what exactly they wanted with Earth, and why they were unaware of bacteria." We Pay Our Fare in Apples Here, by Megan Arkenberg. "Everything in this station has a story," he said. "The walls are curved in such a way that the echo of a penny dropped in the exact center of the tunnel sounds like an apology from your late father. If you crawl beneath the turnstiles in the wrong direction, the next train you board will take you to every place you've ever forgotten, and the ride will last for 7 years. One time, a woman fell off this platform and touched the edge of a rail. She turned into a swan. Commuters find feathers in their briefcases, sometimes. They always smell like summer." About her poems, Megan says, "Both of the poems were written during my stay in Washington, D.C. this June. I spent about half my time visiting monuments and the other half in a DIY writing retreat. My sublease was very conveniently located in regards to Starbucks and delicious Singaporean takeout. We Pay Our Fare and Apples Here grew out of eavesdropping on other travelers in the metro and combining personal experiences, caution signs, and informational posters with stray bits of fairy tales. Wolf's Four Questions came at a much more homesick moment, between my own aimless wandering in a city where I had very few acquaintances and some reflections on the inexplicable motives of horror movie protagonists. I find that most of my poems, perhaps most poems in general, grow from some combination of personal experience and genre tropes, themes, or images."
The Dyson Tree's Promise. In the melancholy gravity of a scorched gas giant doing a cold, tight tango round a burned-out star, a tree, rooted in an icy moon, bred for hard vacuum, basking in gamma rays, sings a long ditty to itself as it dances, as it dreams. An automated search heard its whistling, redundant and dense, full of melody and data. Our poet, a cloud-dwelling number cruncher, took a decade to decode it, understand it, then feel it, be at peace with it, and express it. This is the header from the Mecca Poet. Begin. "I have never put my hope in any other. Any other.
I'm not tired, though I should be. My arms don't fold the way they used to. My hands have become filaments to catch lightning from a gas giant, and I am an artery. A tree. Fractal.
I have never put my hope in any other but my mother star.
I stand, though as a polyp filled with conscious sand, eyes straight on stalks to catch a wider spectrographic band, arms raised in 360 directions, three dolorous dimensions, feet knotted into a history of a condensed dead race, into the intimate, the intricate, the life and the death and the breath.
I have never put my hope in any other but my mother star.
And yet I hold out my arms. I hold out hope. 5 trillion souls. A grove for a planet made of ghosts. I hold out our hope. I hold out my hope.
I want to sleep,
but I am always on.
I want to close my eyes,
but I am awake and I can never blink again.
I want to blow out the fire tickling my fingers,
but 5 trillion voices are laughing too loud.
I want to breathe,
but I am a closed system falling around a gas giant, falling around a white dwarf.
I want to run,
but my roots run too deep inside an underground ocean of a modest-sized moon.
I want to walk away,
but trees in space don't walk. So I hold out my hope, waiting and whistling and wailing.
Come!
Use me for firewood. See and be warm. Find me and warm me.
Speak.
Dance.
Drum.
Play.
Stay.
Fly away and then be still.
And then be still.
I hold out hope, howling into the void so no soul will lose their way because I did not hold out my burning hands in this night. In the wasteland where one tree stands, there is always, always the dream,
at least the dream,
of a forest. I have never put my hope in any other but my mother star. I hold out trillions of hopes, pass them on and scatter them.
In the name,
in the spirit,
in the terra firma of those dreams, I hold out my hope, pass them on. I hold out my 1,080 hands for all to see. I hold out my arms, and I hold out. I hold.
I have never put my hope in any other. And I hold out hope. I hold out hope. I hold. I hold. I hold.
End. In the bright, groovy gravity of a ringed gas giant doing a long, exact slingshot round a bright yellow star, a tree, rooted in an icy moon, bred for hard vacuum, basking in gamma rays, sings a loving ditty to a lonely little forest as it dances, as it dreams.
Bryant O'Hara is a programmer, poet, and musician, not always in that order, sometimes all at once. His most recent publication can be found in the online literary magazine iDrum Periodically. To listen to more of Bryant's poems and other audio pieces, please visit soundcloud.com/Bryant-O'Hara. Bryant lives in Stone Mountain, Georgia with his wife, Alice, 2 out of 7 children, and 1 out of 2 grandchildren. Bryant says this about the genesis of the Dyson Tree's promise. It was inspired over the course of 2 decades by 3 works, The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot, The Star by Arthur C. Clarke, and Babel 17 by Samuel Delaney. Eliot's poem provided the first push. It provoked an existential response which gave rise to the primary image, a tree growing in a wasteland. The first version of the poem was earthbound and had only 1 narrative voice. It felt incomplete, so I filed it away for almost 2 decades. It wasn't until last year that I finally got what I needed to complete the poem's narrative. I had begun reading Babel 17 when I got the idea of including a second narrator, the Mecca poet. I had seen The Star a long time ago televised as an episode of the rebooted Twilight Zone series. I had read the original story later and was trying to find it again to reread it when the final piece kicked in. The Dyson Tree orbiting a dead star system. The moral of the story? Don't throw away old poems. Hungry as Living Sorrow by Jenny Blackford. He left town one night without even a text message. Her parents did their best. These things happen. He was your first. You'll find another boy, a better one. She didn't want a better one. She wanted him. But he'd disappeared into an internet black hole, untrackable. Don't ask about my past, he'd always said. Trust me, you don't want to know. His phone just rang and rang. Every day without a message brought another bruise to her battered heart until, Squishy as a peach, fit only for the compost bin, it plopped from its unsafe cage within her ribs down into the fetid tangle of her guts. Soon the flesh fell off the seed inside the rotted fruit. She could feel the heart seed pulsing, nestled among her pale intestines, hungry as living sorrow. She knew it couldn't be a thing truly alive, a child. They'd never, not that she hadn't wanted to, but he'd always said, "We don't need that. Trust me, you don't want to go there." And he would kiss her again, his long tongue uncoiling tenderly into her mouth, and she would melt softly into him. Nothing was enough to fill the gap he'd gouged inside of her when he left. The seed deep in her guts was full of emptiness. She fed it bleakly, and it grew, squishy and sorrowful, out of its hard center. She knew her mother knew about her midnight chocolate raids, milk and dark, cake and mousse, bar and slab. Endless chocolate. Chocolate was good. It was all she could remember ever seeing him eat. The thing that once had been her heart thrived on its bittersweet diet. Night by night, it grew and divided, filling her belly with firm frog-spawn bubbles. The whisperings of her myriad tadpole children disturbed her sweaty dreams. "Father, we're ripening fast. When will we meet you? Where?" She felt, rather than heard, his answer. "Wait till your wings form. When you are fully ripe, the husk will spring open, and you will fly free. Our ship is hidden in plain sight, high in the blue. Meet me above the clouds, and I will guide you through the hatch." Up in their room, her deluded parents plotted. Drugs, psychiatrists. She couldn't blame them. They meant well in their way. They'd never understood. She stroked her squirming abdomen with tender hands, dying to see her lovely babies, their tails lashing in the sky, their new wings drying in the sun. Jenny Blackford is an Australian writer and poet. Her long centaur poem in the Pedestal magazine last year was nominated for a Riesling Award. She has a poem in the latest Westerly, one forthcoming in Strange Horizons, and three forthcoming in Quadrant. Pamela Sargent described her subversively feminist historical novella set in classical Athens and Delphi, The Priestess and the Slave, as elegant. In late 2013, Pitt Street Poetry published an illustrated chapbook of her cat poems titled The Duties of a Cat. Jenny says, "My inspiration for the poem was Perth writer, poet, artist Kira McKenzie's experience of terrible, mysterious pains in the gut. Despite careful investigation in hospital, doctors found nothing. What, I wondered, could possibly cause such pain? Though I'm sure that the source of Kira's pain was nothing like the poem."
The girl who tipped through time hailed from pure black-haired Roma gypsies and from dark skinwalker brujas, also con women, and somnambulists, the golden bloodlines for a soothsayer, and for the gift of reading truth. But she found herself living by a dusty road near the beaches of Matakasham, where clouds hung like weighted curtains, and sunburnt boys rode waxen boards, visiting her with driftglass and driftwood. Beached below her cottage of gray shingles and curtained windows, horse-headed seals gathered at dawn, their soot-black eyes looking expectant, hoping for a glimpse of her face. Only she kept to kitchen and hearth, whipping tall bushel baskets of stringy weavers of seagrass and wolfsbane threaded with flotsam, trapping the wishes of lost mariners. For she herself was both lost and at sea, having time-tipped from another century, stranded in this wasteland of days, trapped with only one hope of escape, that of foreseeing by sea-worn stones. At dusk, she stalked the water's edge, chewed a bit of salvia divinorum, picked along like a sanderling, where the rounded glacial gravel lay exposed in thin beds. Some evening, she must surely find the right bit, the right keystone, with a crack made precisely on the day and exact moment of her temporal dislocation. Then she will rub her exile out by rubbing her thumb along the length of that line, opening an exploitable cosmic fissure, a way to time tip for home. This evening she found a carnelian, oblong and rife with inclusions. Upon reading its serial history, her exact dateline was lacking. She pocketed the near miss and moved on. At midnight, she stoked a driftwood fire against the back bricks of her fireplace, then tossed in the carnelian with others she had stored in her baskets, cracking them on the red-hot coals. In this way, she marked memories for an age as yet unfound.
Robert Fraser works as the curator of exhibitions for the Artists Association of Nantucket. His oil paintings and etchings are in galleries in New York State, Cape Cod, and on the island of Nantucket, where he lives with his wife, Carol Lindquist, a nationally recognized basket maker. He attended the Clarion Writers' Workshop in 1980. Some of his favorite other things: making scrimshaw, sushi, polishing beach stones, small boat sailing, mahjong, modern Americana music, and weather photography. He is the author of 9 books of poetry and a 3-time winner of the Reisling Award, as well as an Asimov's Reader Award for poetry, collaborating with James Patrick Kelly. And he has been on the final ballot for a Nebula Award with fiction, collaborating with Lucius Shepard. He is a Grand Master of Poetry awarded by the SFPA. Fraser says, "The location of the girl who tipped through time is a step back to the 1960s shoreline on the island where I live. Simple, cedar-shingled, white-trimmed cottages, possessed of wood floors tracked with sand and windowsills decorated in shells and old bottles. Madikisham is a valley near the local airport of low bushes and flowers, Japanese pines, scrub oak no taller than a man, and a sand road that leads past a handful of summer cottages to a pristine beach that looks out to the mid-Atlantic shelf. There's salt in the morning dew and airplane noise. I exist in a basket maker's environment. My wife, Carol, makes a living at weaving a basket that is specific to Nantucket Island, the lightship basket. The baskets, woven on molds, originated on the various early lightships that were anchored as mariners' guides in the treacherous shoals around Nantucket from the 1850s to about 1980. That'll do it. Lest you get to pining for award land or Contestville, I'd like to remind you that nominations for the Reisling Award are open through February 15th, 2014. If you would like me to consider your best poem for a nomination, please send it to me. You can find my contact details on the Starship Sofa website under Submissions. Thank you for joining me today, and thanks to Tony for giving Poetry Planet a place to extol her virtues. Next time, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled tour stop, Animals and Creatures, where we'll have a closer look at the fauna of Poetry Planet. Until next time, this is me, signing out.